I guess that gives us a little bit of an insight into some of the ways that we think about Christmas. Here we are approaching a great time of year, isn't it? It's a time of friends, family, presents, happiness, and yet at the same time, I guess that film reminds us that whether we like it or not, we find ourselves traveling through this life on a knife edge between triumph and disaster, a knife edge between happiness and hurt. That's the reality. And I suppose that as we move towards a time of great happiness, and there are just a huge amount of really great things around the Christmas time, maybe what we want to do just for a few minutes is sit down and think. Because I think what we have a tendency to do is to live our lives with a series of masks. We wear masks. In fact, it's one of those classic pictures in so many artistic representations of the clown's mask. The happiness that is hiding behind it, the tear-stained face. And I suppose in lots of ways that's what we can do with Christmas. And what we're reminded of there is that for all of the joy and for all of the excitement, the reality is that there is tragedy, and maybe some of us over this next period of time might know that we're facing tragedy. Or might not know that we're facing tragedy during these coming days. It hits us so unexpectedly. But we live from mask to mask. We'll keep ourselves happy by going through this next period of excitement. What was the last mask that we were wearing just before Christmas? I don't know about you, but I suppose for me the last mask that I look back at was holidays. It doesn't seem that long ago, does it, that we were enjoying summer holidays? There was a summer this past year, if you didn't notice. There was a time of year that was defined as summer, but it didn't feel much like that. We had a great time, and I suppose a lot of us at the end of that, our minds shifted. I'm now looking forward to Christmas time. The masks of Christmas, holidays, whatever is going to be the next mask beyond the 28th of December, New Year's Eve maybe. Beyond New Year's Eve, what is it then? I suppose the adverts are one of the best ways of shaping what masks we create for ourselves. You turn on the TV and it gives you a good indication of what we're moving on to next. But let's stop for a minute. Because the great thinker, Charlie Brown, at the beginning of that series, just raised a question for us. He asked, isn't there anybody who can tell me what Christmas is about? None of what we've just seen would have sparked in many people's thinking what Christmas is actually all about. Let's remind ourselves of what it is about. It's certainly not a time of party. It's certainly not a time of national or international holidays. It's rooted back 2,000 years ago at the birth of one human being into this world. A baby who was born to a peasant woman in a small town in Palestine. We've just read together an account of that, and as we read, we saw that even the birth of that little child had tragic consequences for many people. We read about Herod. Herod was the king, and we read that there were these men, kings, wise men, whatever we want to call them, the magi, they're described as. They went to Herod, who was the king of Israel at the time, Palestine at the time, and asked him about the idea of a ruler being born. Well, Herod was instantly concerned about this. His kingdom, he perceived, was under threat. But he played a pretty clever game and asked these men to go and find this child who was born. And then once they'd found him, to go and to report back. The end result of that was that when Herod found out where Jesus was supposedly born, but not because these wise men had gone back and told him, but rather because he'd found out about Bethlehem, he sent his army, and thousands of children were killed. Thousands of young children were killed. It's depicted in ancient murals. The idea of thousands of little ones being killed because King Herod, at the time, felt as though his kingdom was under threat. And so we see the origin there of the historical Christmas time. The event was a tiny baby being born into really a backstreet town. Nothing particularly impressive. Nothing that would seem at the time rock the world. But what we've seen over these past 2,000 years is that that event, that seemingly insignificant event, has actually shaped the world. Jesus, the historical figure, has had the greatest impact, arguably, of any human being in the history of civilization. Because he's not just a historical figure, he's somebody who continues to be an impact today. He continues to be a focus of either affection and love or hate. People continue to still either hate Jesus of Nazareth or love him. Certainly most people in our country at this point in time have still heard of him. But let's just remind ourselves that that seemingly insignificant event of 2,000 years ago was actually the beginning of Christmas. What we look back to remember, the birth of Jesus, who became recognized as the Christ, Christ Mass, Christ Present. A little baby who became the subject and the focus of one of the best-selling books in all of history, the Bible. The Bible has sold, it's estimated, something like 6.5 billion copies in its current 66 books form. 6 to 6.5 billion copies. There's one book, actually, that comes fairly close. In fact, it might be close to being on a par with sales of the Bible. One other book. These two books are streets ahead of any other sales. Don't know whether anybody's got it in their minds. Chairman Mao's Little Red Book. Two books in the history of the world that have sold 6 to 6.5 billion copies. That's what you might call a bestseller. Both of those books have had a huge impact, actually. One of those books has been in circulation since 1964, possibly 66, depending on how you take the first print. 1966. Isn't it interesting that already in 2008, the only other book that comes close to the sales of the Bible is actually becoming of historical interest, no longer continuing to dramatically shape the way people think and the way people live. And yet, the Bible continues to do that, the story of the message of Jesus. One continues to gain influence in this world, and one is becoming a historical curio. Interesting. that the message of Jesus, a historical birth of 2,000 years ago that seemed at the time so insignificant, has actually become profoundly shaping to this world. So the first thing I want us to see is that the idea of Christmas, the historical foundation, the origin of Christmas, is rooted in the birth of a peasant child. So let's take one mask away. It's a great mask a lot of the time. It's a mask of family and happiness and friends and party and food and all of the other good things for us to enjoy. But when we take that mask away and it disappears, behind it, Christmas says, the birth of a peasant child. Let's have a quick look, shall we, at that account that we read. We saw that this baby had had an impact already. Three wise teachers, three wise thinkers or leaders or kings, whatever they were, the three wise men, they had traveled a huge distance to Bethlehem to find this Jesus. But what they do is surprising. When they finally find him, these intelligent, rich, influential men fall on the knees. In fact, we read in Matthew chapter 2 and verse 11, we read these words. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. That's what these influential, rich, powerful men did when they came into the presence of this tiny little baby. I don't know about you, but just when you stop and think about that, that is very surprising behavior, isn't it? That is unexpected behavior. The idea that these men would travel that distance, fair enough, present gifts, but then for them to fall down on their knees and worship a tiny baby is extraordinary. In fact, it's believed, I would suggest to you actually, that in the history of the world, there have been just probably two people who've had that kind of impact on others. Yet, there's been the odd few, that the likes of David Icke, if you remember him, who claimed to be some sort of deity, and one or two others, David Koresh of the Branch Davinian sect. There's been one or two who've stood up and claimed deity, and for a very, very short time, they've had people bow down and worship them, but it's been passing, very temporary. In the history of the world, there have been two people who over history have had that response. One is Jesus of Nazareth. The other is Buddha Gautama. Both of them have had people bow before them and worship them. In fact, as they went on through life, it wasn't something that stopped, although nobody bowed down and worshipped Gautama at his birth. They started to worship him later on in life. But there was something about Jesus that caused people, when they came into his presence, to do just what the kings did. In fact, as he continued through life, he continued to have people respond by bowing down and worshipping him. As they looked at what he did, his actions, as they heard what he said, as they started to engage with this historical man, Jesus, their response was to bow down and to worship. to fall at his feet, to see in Jesus something significantly different. His moral identity. His teaching was so extraordinary that people continued to bow right the way through his life. Now, as Gautama progressed through life, other people started to do that. But what is really significant is at the end of their life, how they both responded to that worship. At the end of his life, Gautama said, "Don't worship me." He separated himself from that worship. He said, "Don't worship me. Whatever you do, don't worship me. Don't consider me anything special. I'm just a man." As he died on his deathbed, that was some of his final words. "Don't worship me. Worship what I teach. Worship my message. Show respect to others around. But whatever you do, don't worship me." But Jesus called us to do exactly the opposite. What a difference. The two people in the history of this world who have had anybody bowing to them in worship in the way that many do today, their response is almost diametrically opposed. One says, "Don't worship me." One says, "Yes, continue to worship me. Continue to bow down before me." Their responses are so different. As we peel back the thoughts and the ideas of Christmas, we see that that is one of the fundamental messages of the Christmas story. You see, it's not just rooted in the idea of a peasant birth in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago. It's also rooted in the idea of somebody coming into this world who is worthy of our worship. In fact, right at his birth, there's another verse around the time that says that the proclamation that was made at the time was glory to God in the highest. The occasion of this birth of this little child brings glory to God. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men on whom his favor rests. Somehow, the birth of that child, one who is worthy of worship, one who is deserving of respect, so the Bible claims, one who people throughout the centuries have looked on and decided, "You are worth falling down in front of and worshipping," brings glory to God and peace to this world. How can that be? If the Bible is true in its claims, what it's actually saying to us is that the way that God is glorified and peace is brought to this world is actually held together, brought together by the birth of Jesus. The birth of Jesus does both of those. It brings glory to God and it brings peace to this world. It's as though both of those ideas converge in this infant in Bethlehem. Glory to God. How does this bring glory to God? How does this tiny little infant, insignificant, weak, make God look amazing? Make God look wonderful? How does it happen? How can that be? Maybe it's something like this. Let me draw a picture in your minds. She was a tiny, tiny little girl. She was only about 3 or 4. And she had got lost, separated from her parents in a city in the Middle East very recently. She was in the middle of a war zone. It was a terrifying experience. She was walking around the streets, tear-stained face, terrified. All around her was chaos. And captured in pictures was an American soldier. Great big guy. Huge guy. Everything that's kind of stereotypically an American soldier. I don't know whether we've got any American soldiers in the room. If we have, I apologize at this point before I carry on. You know the kind of guys that always seem to have bigger guns, bigger armor, bigger boots than anybody else. That kind of guy. The kind that G.I. Joe is modeled on. And he looked so imposing, just so far away from this tiny little girl. And yet, in her fear, in her terror, he dropped down on his knees. He took off his body armor. He took off his helmet. He got right down to her level. He got a hold of her hand. And he started to talk to her. Gently and quietly. Calming her down. Bringing her a peace. What's gone on there? What's actually happened? Something has gone on, hasn't it? There's been a communication. There's been a reaching out. That little girl is now speaking to somebody who has become accessible to her. In fact, he's changed his appearance to become accessible to her. He's let go of some of his might. He's let go of something which would have been terrifying to her and dropped down to his level, to her level rather. He's brought her a peace. He's brought peace into her moment of fear. And at the same time, wouldn't you agree that he looks greater as he does that? He looks more powerful in a way in his weakness. He looks stronger as he lets himself look weak. He looks greater. Let me use the word that the Bible uses. He looks glorious when he becomes weak. And at the same time, he brings peace into her world in that moment. You know, that's the message of Christmas, actually. That's what happens at the birth of a tiny baby into this world. If you've ever struggled with the idea, how does God look great and glorious and yet at the same time peace can be brought into this world? It's because Jesus strips himself of everything that would terrify us, everything that would separate us from him, everything that would make us fall down in fear and terror at his greatness. He strips himself of that. And he stoops down, breaking into this world in a way that means he can hold our hand and talk to us and bring us peace. Isn't that an amazing thing? That's what the Bible claims of Jesus. But you see, that GI is only powerful in that moment of time because although he's made himself weak, he's also at the same time got the strength to do something about her situation. And that's what people started to find out about Jesus. Yes, he might have broken into this world in weakness as a tiny baby, but as time went on, he began to realize that he was able to do something. It wasn't just that he'd come into this world as a weak baby remaining there, but in some way, just like that Marine who then picked her up in all of his strength, picked up his armor and his helmet and his gun, and marched her off to safety in his arms, he was able to show that little girl, I can reach down to your level and become sensitive to you, no longer terrifying to you, accessible to you, and at the same time I can then pick you up and take you to safety. I've got that kind of strength as well. That's what Jesus does for us. He comes into this world. He breaks into this world in weakness, and yet people found that as time went on, what was revealed to them was somebody who could effectively pick up his armor and his helmet and his gun in this world and actually march people through to peace. Why is that? Well, the Bible makes a simple claim. I just want you to open your mind to the possibility that what was happening 2,000 years ago in that little town was that the only one who could possibly, yes, kneel down and break into our world in a way that could be accessible to us was also one who could rise above the issues of this world and actually bring us peace. The Bible makes the claim that that's possible because it was God himself that was there at that moment. God breaking into this world. Oh, please, that might sound extraordinary to you. And I'm not making any demand on you other than please give it some time to investigate, to think through, to consider, is this possible? Is it actually possible that might be the case? That it might be God himself coming into this world? That give it time. Make the investigation. Consider the issues. Because Jesus does claim to have stripped himself of his grandeur, broken into this world, but is then able to bring a peace. That takes us full circle, you know. It takes us right back to the beginning where people are living with masks. Moving from one hope of happiness, stepping stones of happiness through life that get us through the dreary times at best, the drudgery of 9 to 5 or 9 to 7 or 6 till 2 or whatever it might be, the drudgery of the P45 through the post, the drudgery of the bank statement coming through the post, the drudgery of this world that is interspersed with stepping stones of holiday and Christmas. Maybe it's the case that what many people have found is that Jesus is somebody who can break into this world and bring a deep inner peace. So that our peace is no longer rooted in the masks of the stepping stones of joy. It's actually much deeper. I think the Christian faith needs to, or any faith actually, needs to do two things. It needs to make sense. It needs to be, to put it another way, it needs to be intellectually coherent. We've lost that idea when it comes to spirituality these days. In actual fact, we think that spirituality can be
whatever we decide it to be. I would argue, let's just think about the need that the Christian faith has to make sense. Any faith has to make sense. But secondly, it has to mean something to us. It has to make sense, but it has to mean something to us as well. The way that we can describe that, here's a big word, existentially coherent. It can mean something to me in my existence, in my inner being. It's not just in my head that it makes sense, but it means something to me deep, deep inside my being. It makes sense and it means something to me. I make a plea to you to give the opportunity for the message of Jesus as it's proclaimed in the Bible, as it's explained in the Bible, to be given a hearing. That's all I ask. Just give it a hearing. See why there are many people, countless people, over these past 2,000 years, me and many in this room included, who have found that Jesus is actually somebody who is worth bowing down to, worth worshipping. Somebody who makes sense, but means something deep inside as well. That in my thinking is clear, that the message is clear, and at the same time does something for peace inside. That's the message of Christmas. The message of Jesus, who can satisfy us and actually take away our dependency on masks. Be able to enjoy all of the pleasures of this life that we live, the great things that we enjoy during this coming time, but also to give us the opportunity of founding something which is deeper, more powerful, more meaningful to our inner being. Thanks very much. I want to ask you if you've found what we've said this evening, a number of things. Maybe you've found it. Maybe there's something in that. Maybe you've thought, I've just got 1,000 questions as a result of that. All sorts of things that I just don't agree with. Or maybe you've thought, maybe that's worthwhile listening to some extent. I want to find out a bit more. I at least want to rule it out. Then can I invite you? Come along every Sunday afternoon here. 4:30. We're going to be meeting on a Sunday afternoon. Please do join us over these coming weeks.